Let's talk tech.
I don't actually know what we're talking about today.
That's good.
This is good. So, you know, I'm going to be as surprised as the listeners. So yeah. I think we should just keep it that way.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's episode of Let's Talk Tech. So, yeah, today we have a very interesting lineup for you. We have someone here with us who's going to be talking to us about user experience design. I'm particularly interested in this conversation because when I was thinking about just sort of who to have this conversation with, he came to mind because I thought of someone who would have had some kind of broad experience. And when it comes to user experience design, there can be some kind of one-sidedness in some sense. So maybe someone focusing more on the more aesthetic part of it, or someone focusing more on the research part of it alone. But we just wanted to have someone who has a very holistic perspective of user experience design. And I think our guest today, Charles, I think he will be the right person to do that. So yeah, Charles, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Hi, everyone. I am glad to be here.
So, can you tell us a bit about yourself and what you do?
My name is Charles Ndroko, and I'm a UX designer. See, I use the term interchangeably, product designer, UX designer. But honestly, I'm just a designer and a businessman. I like to think I'm just a designer and a businessman. And the reason why that is at the core of defining who I am is also tied to my experience and my history. So I had the privilege of growing up in a family business. My parents had a computer business center. Anyways, the business evolved to become a printing press down the line. That sort of kickstarted my experience with graphic design. Graphic design, print design, post-production. So we talk about banners, editorials, and all of that. Now, all of this time, I wouldn't consider it my career because I didn't know that was what I was going to do. I was just doing it. It's a family business. But I would say that was a defining moment that I wasn't even aware of. And fast forward to going to uni, I think in my second year, into my third year, I started my own small business on campus. The first job I did was for my school fellowship, Redeemed Christian Fellowship. It was a poster for our Brothers and Sisters Weekend. I remember vividly. And I think that was the first job I ever did. I made a profit of, I think it was 12,000. I can't remember.
Wow. That's a lot.
And I gave it all back to the fellowship at the time. It was really
sorry, currency, please. 12,000.
Yeah. 12,000 naira.
Very important.
Definitely that 10,000 pounds. Wow. Anyways, but yeah, that was my experience, and that kickstarted me running my own small business there on campus. And I was designing magazines, posters, event tickets, awards, and all of that. To be frank, I was a big boy on campus. I won't even lie.
You were earning 12,000
because you were
so.
The designer. Yeah. Or because of the
that's the small part of it. Further down the line, in my third year, that was when I started thinking about my career. Because I was doing biochemistry on campus then. This was me. This was after trying to get into medicine. Anyway, I eventually dropped out my third year for a bit. And that was because I didn't want to do biochemistry anymore. I was so obsessed with doing tech. It was also around this time the tech boom in Nigeria was catching the wildfire. This was 2015, 2016. And I decided, it was around that time I decided I wanted to get into the whole tech scene. Like, this printing press business looks like a rudimentary tech. I'm not sure how I was going to make $1 million. And that was when I decided I wanted to do tech. So get started, I joined Upwork. Mm-hmm. Upwork is a freelance platform. I joined Upwork in late 2015. I got my first job in March of 2016. And I was a virtual assistant doing whereby data mining.
Just to clarify, you said you got on Upwork in 2015 and then you got your first job in 2016.
Yeah, March 2016. The first job I had was a data entry and web mining job. I was just supposed to scrape data, specific kind of data across specific locations, yellow pages and all of that for the client. And I think they were paying me about $4 per hour. That was what I was, and I was doing like 20 hours a week. You get, so that was the first time I ever earned in dollars. And this was when dollars was 160 something, 168, I think. That was literally my entrance. I was like, wow. So I can be in Nigeria and be working for people as well as making dollars. So you know what? You know when the Bible says Eve at the apple and her eyes opened?
Your eyes opened.
It felt like my eyes popped up in that moment, and I kept hustling. I stopped going to class, spent sleepless night looking for job, applying and learning about the platform.
So from there, you were like, no more biochem. I'm focusing on tech.
No more biochem. Anyways, down the line, and I got a gig that I did for 2 years. It was for a marketing agency in the US. They help folks who create crowdfunding, they do marketing. So some people create crowdfunding pages on Kickstarter and Indiegogo and even GoFundMe. So this agency create marketing pieces for that sort of campaign. And I was helping them generate leads. I generated about 3.2 million leads in the time I was there.
So at this point, you're no longer a data entry or a data miner. You started entering into lead generation.
Yeah, I started doing lead generation and qualifying the leads and all of that. I would spend sleepless time making sure leads that were going into the campaign were actual human beings, like they existed. So checking Facebook, doing reverse lookup on Facebook pages, yellow pages, and all, literally any source you could find a person's details. LinkedIn and so forth. I eventually, after doing that, design has always been my first love. And I wasn't getting any design gig because, trust me, folks on Upwork and all of this platform, they're really good. See, I thought I was good, but I was just a local champion. I was just a local champion. Coming on that stage, I was like, I applied to so many jobs. In fact, when I go to apply to a job, one of the things I do is I look at the client history and see the sort of people that have worked for him for them before and check their profile. And it discourages me because, like, let's not lie. Like, I can't lie to everybody. I can't lie to myself. I can't do this. Like, this is beyond my expertise. And that was when it dawned on me that there is room to be better. Like, there is room to be a better designer and all of that. And then I went into an overdrive, started exploring a lot of tools. In that time, I remember I did 3D for a bit. I did motion graphics. I learned branding and marketing.
What was the time frame for this? So
this was late 2016 to mid-2018.
So you were spending all that time learning more about design?
Yep. Yep.
But were you still doing the marketing stuff? Okay.
Yeah. So within that time, I did a lot of projects with design. But instead, I discovered at the time, I knew design from the face of,
like what looks good to you.
What looks good.
Yeah.
I didn't know the business of design, like solving a problem with design.
So how did you learn that? What resources did you use? What kind of journey did you go on?
I remember I joined a couple of communities online. I remember.
Can you tell us the name?
Asha Koteri.
Okay.
So that experience of self-learning, joining communities, taking on jobs I shouldn't have taken in the first place. I would not even like. There are people that probably hate me just like that. I might not know why they hate me, but if I think about it, rather than taking a job I could not do and eventually failing woefully at it. But one thing I never did was stop learning. It felt like I was consumed by the intangible desire to be better. Like I wanted to do something. Within this time also I explored other fields, funny enough. front end engineering.
You kept yourself very busy. This is the third career path, if I'm not mistaken.
I guess more. Trust me, I went through a lot. I know I did front end engineering. I tried doing data. I won't go admitted to one online university to do data science. And I already started doing Python and all that, but I'm like,
It sounds like you were determined to get into tech. You were one way or another, I'm going
to
get in.
Yeah. I knew I wanted to be in tech. I knew I wanted to do something, but everything seems important. It seems front end engineering was important. It looks like back end engineering. Funny enough, I did 1 week of cloud classes.
Of course you did.
Like, why, right? That's not a surprise at this point.
I did 1 week of getting into DevOps and cloud engineering. But like,
but it's like design was your true love, if you will, like your true passion. So did you keep coming back to design?
While I was doing all of these things, funny enough, I was doing design on the side to keep body and soul together. I was making that money actually from doing design.
Were you still on Upwork at this time? Like mid-2018?
Yeah, I was still on Upwork. And by this time, I had made over $10,000 on Upwork.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a serious side hustle, you know?
Yeah. Guys, listen up.
Take notes.
But I was still coming by. It was more like, and I felt like, you know, where I had people advising me, oh, do front engineering, oh, do back engineering. But I just felt like, you know what? I'm going to explore everything myself.
I think you've described something which a lot of people might contend with. Like, because like you said, there's a tech boom, right? And it's like, everything seems important. Everything is growing. Which path do I pursue? And I think a lot of people might get caught in this same thing you're describing, where they start learning different things. And then it's like, which one do I stick with? How did you decide to kind of stick with design? How did you end up in design ultimately?
Funny enough, it had to take a friend who had designed a business card for. We were just talking randomly, and he said, oh, he had this friend who was trying to build a startup. Now, this was 2018. And he said he was looking for a designer if I wanted to join the team and all of that. And here's the thing. These guys who were building the startup were incubated in a hub on campus. That hub had the best Wi-Fi. They had solar panels, so they had two for electricity. I didn't join that startup because I think it was going to be my next opportunity. I joined because
joined for the
I knew I would have access to that place.
Timmy already saw where this was going.
I said yes, and I joined. But interestingly, that became the very turning point of the career I had.
Like your career, yeah.
When I was with him, he said, you know, if you are so keen on getting into tech, you really have a design skill. And he said, apart from your design skill, I think you're a very creative person. I see the way you think. I see the way you visualize things. And I think you're a very creative person and intuitive person. There's a part of tech called product design, UI, UX, where people focus on the experience of a software, taking human behaviors into considerations and building software in the way they will experience it in their everyday life, all of that. That's something you might want to look at. And I was like, UI, UX. After spending a couple of months, but I remember saying I no longer wanted to design food banners, magazines.
Like print. You didn't want to do print design anymore.
Exactly. I remember saying I didn't want to do that, that I wanted to design digital products. I wanted to design products that people experience that impact people's lives.
Yeah. It sounds like that was a turning point for you in terms of... So from then on, was it then laser focus? Why do I feel like the answer to this is no? Was it then laser focus on design, or were your eyes still wandering?
So it was... I think I was more laser focused at this point, but that didn't mean I didn't do other things. In fact, I didn't even get... my first UX gig wasn't until sometime in 2019.
Okay.
What I was doing for a startup at the time, because the product we were building for our startup at the time was a hardware product, and there wasn't much to do with UI UX until later down the line. So what I spent more time doing was designing the marketing communications, the website, and all of that for the brand. We are building drones. That was mm-hmm. what we were building at the time. Using CAD designs, and we then 3D print the drones and test them. That literally was the point I started checking out what UI UX was, what it entailed. I started taking courses on Coursera, Udacity, all of these places.
So this was 2019, right?
Yeah, this was late 2018 into early 2019.
Were you taking all these courses at the same time? You said Coursera and Udacity.
Yeah, I was doing multiple courses at the same time. In fact, funny enough, my first UI UX gig was in 2018. It was in late 2018. I had designed an app for a friend. She was trying to pitch the app for one of these entrepreneurship pitch competitions. Around December of that time, I also had done two more projects. One, I had gone into a competition that was organized by LRE. And the competition was to redesign the website of Nigeria. So Nigeria.gov is currently one of my most liked projects on my Behance portfolio today, even. Well, the competition was to do that. I had done that. I came second position, so first runner up. And I remember there was a huge argument in the comment section, and if everybody was like, no, I was supposed to be the first position, who are the people who voted, and all that. Anyways, that's the first design gig I did, and I won a prize. I think the prize money was 30,000 naira.
Which is nothing to a $1,000.
10,000.
Like you.
It wasn't even about the money.
Yeah, at this point, it's like a passion.
That singular event gave me the next gig of, I think, 630K that I did.
Naira?
Yeah, 630,000 naira. It wasn't even the 30K at the time, but everybody saw it and thought it was really good and thoughtful. And it was also a very validating moment because someone spoke very highly about how he's surprised that I've only done UI UX for a while, but my design thinking skills are very intuitive and strong. And it was then I just saw like, well, this is where we are.
Like, here we
go. You get. And by 2019, and in I think March of 2019, I joined Softcom. Softcom is a tech company back in Nigeria. I joined as a visual creative designer. So it wasn't even you. I was working in marketing and comms. So that's where I started. Because I was trying to apply for UI UX job and everybody was looking for somebody with 1 or 2 years experience. So while I had experience, I didn't really have experience working in teams or in a like corporate setting UI UX. I mostly just did freelance gigs. So anyways, you know what? I was like, you know what? There's always a way. My plan was to get into the doorway. Creative design and switch to UI UX down the line.
Within the same organization?
Yeah, within the same organization. That was my plan, but it never worked out.
So yeah. What came next? So we're in 2019.
I was with Softcom for almost a year. Within that time also, I did several UI UX gigs. Now, I have done by this time, by mid-2019, I have done extensive UI UX work as a freelancer while I was working as a marketing and communication specialist. Working in the marketing and communications team as a visual designer, I remember I had wanted to change to UI UX. Luckily enough, I met the first guy who took a chance on me, even without having a professional, or what you call a corporate portfolio for UI UX, to come and lead a couple of products in a venture studio.
At this point, have you finished your courses or you were still taking your courses?
I think I'd gone past the basics and I was mostly sort of like advancing. I was taking more advanced course. This time around, I wasn't learning about components, all of that. Maybe I was more or less learning about design systems, design thinking, product strategy, business strategy. How does design, what part does design really play in the broader sense of a business strategy? So I was now learning more out of design things. It wasn't active design work. It was heavily on product strategy. That was why I was spending my time learning more. I don't think visual design has ever been visual design has always been my strongest suit. So I didn't spend a lot of time trying to do that. I rather went on to focus on learning more about product strategy. I remember when I said I had realized early on that I knew how to be a graphic designer, but I didn't know the business context of how design solved the problem. So when I got to this point, it was what was important for me. Okay, now I know what UIUX is. Now I know how to put together an interface. You get, but why? What does it really solve? How does it impact? Why is it valuable?
When you kind of think of, you've mentioned the visual design, you mentioned the strategy, you've also mentioned product design. Because I remember when we started out, I said you've had kind of like a broad perspective around like the whole UX ecosystem. So if you were to differentiate, or if you were to explain to someone the difference between all of them, the UI, UX, the UI, the UX, the product design, what is the difference between them?
UI, user interface, it's literally in the name. Okay? It's the very tangible artifact you can see. The buttons you click, the colors you see, and all of that. It's literally the UI. The UX, on the other hand, is what all of those things mean and why they are there in the first place. As a user, I want to do ABC. The job of UX is to literally help carry that user through every stepwise process to achieve their goal, essentially. So it's more or less like you want to travel back to Nigeria, and there is a flight, there's a direct flight from Heathrow to Lagos, and there's also a flight that would have to stop at Qatar or Doha before it lands to Lagos. Those are two flights going to the same place, but doing it differently. All of the process into thinking which is better for you is something a UX designer would think. That's why there's a lot of different fintech apps. And like, some people do it faster, some people do it well. It could be the smallest detail as reducing the number of merry-go-round. It could be the smallest detail as communicating better. So all of those things that are not tangible to just the interface, but how the user experience the product, essentially is what UX is. Then as regards product design, for you to be a product design, you can't go on to say things like marketing is not your business, sales is not your business. Being a product designer is essentially that encapsulation of UI, UX, UX research, product marketing. Now, and it's not like you need to do all of these things in a broad sense. Oftentimes, you need to understand how it works because it guides how you build or design a product. As a product designer, does the product really solve the problem? How do you continue to grow the product to even reach more audience that this problem affects? How do you now take personalization into context and try to make more and more people use the product? How does the product make money? How do you market it? What do you say? How do you communicate? So product design is literally encapsulating all of that process into your thinking process when building a product.
It's interesting hearing about that, like on a conceptual level, but what does a typical day look like for you? What does being a UI UX designer look like day to day?
An ideal UI UX day for me really is to decide what am I working on today. Is it research or is it testing? Or do I have all of the artifacts I need to design an interface?
And yeah. What does artifact mean?
Oh, so artifact is basically all of the things I need to inform my design. So my research insights, mood board, illustrations, if I need illustrations and maybe sort of other assets to put my design together, I consider all of that as artifacts. If I have them together, usually it's the signal that I'm ready to get into designing the interface, really. That's usually a straightforward process, honestly. I usually get inspiration from looking at platforms like Dribbble, Behance, Nicely Done, Made in Webflow, just or maybe literally any competitor product. I just go and look at it and like, I think ours could be better. I'll literally copy you, but I'll just make it better.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how are you gonna copy them when you're like, well, I can do it better?
Yeah, I'll literally copy you, but I'll just do it better. There's always a better way to do stuff. Yeah,
that's true.
Actually,
you don't always have to reinvent the wheel. You can just enhance.
And sometimes, I mean, a lot of times, not just sometimes. It's not even about copying or not copying. It's more or less about there is already an established mental model of how users use this product, use this kind of product. So reinventing the whole is probably wasting your own time. Imagine somebody designing email.
I have a question. What is mental model? Let's break it down for people. What does that mean?
So a mental model is an already established standard, either by convention or behavior, of which you do something. So for example, the way you scroll through your TL on Twitter, it's a mental model. Almost every social app is structured that way, from Facebook to Instagram to Twitter, Quora, Reddit, all of that.
Yeah, they've all got the same kind of interface experience. Yeah,
exactly. And LinkedIn, all of them. Everybody literally, they are used to using the product like that. If you bring a new product and change it and say you want to browse my tags, honestly, people will just get tired and drop off. It would take years and years of reconditioning to be able to achieve great success at changing the way users use a particular thing. So that's literally a mental model.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, what are your productivity hacks or tips? How do you stay productive?
Honestly, even me, I'm looking for productivity hacks.
All whilst doing a side hustle, you must have some tips you can share with us on how you stay productive and like
some secret sauce.
My secret
sauce is literally following the ginger, and here's what I mean.
Okay.
I'm a very terrible procrastinator. you will be shocked. In fact, a lot of people was like, they hear about how much of an executioner I can be, and at the same time
they like how
you get like how
high performing.
So
I think most of us are, to be honest.
I know.
Yeah, so is this thing where I could, for example, let's use a 10-hour gap. Say I have 10 hours to work, there's a high chance for 6-7 hours, but you see that crunch time, that last 4 hours,
and when the pressure hits. For me, it's when the pressure hits. Like, if there's no pressure, I'm just like, where's the fun in even doing this right now? Like,
you guess.
I need to feel like, oh, there's a risk of failure here, then I'm like, okay, let's go.
The funny thing is, I'm not technically faffing, because at the back of my mind, I am actively thinking about that thing. I'm even creating.
Do you know what I call that? I call that background processing. So this is my excuse. I'm like, I'm background processing. Don't worry. Well, that's what I call it.
Yeah, but yeah. So in the background, I'm processing all of it and almost figuring it out. Such that once the moment I sit down to do it, I'm executing.
I think there's value to that, though, especially when you're doing something design-led or creative. I think you almost have to let like the concept marinate or your research marinate, and then like, okay, now let me go, let me create, let me execute.
Exactly. And the interesting thing, it could be in my everyday. For example, I remember changing an entire interface concept because I saw something in the movie. And it just ties back to something I learned from Don Norman. Norman is a UX veteran. Literally anybody who knows their work in UX design knows him. He said in his 50 years of experience designing, he's been designing for the last 50 years, he still feels wrong when he assumes human behaviors. And that is why, for him, design doesn't only start or stop when he looks at the screen. In his everyday interaction with human beings, it is how he forms his theories about design, because design in its core sense is human behavior.
Yeah, it's a behavioral thing, right? You're trying to tap into like our routines and the way that we think, the way we like to do things, and like disrupt that in a way that we enjoy. Yeah. Right, so you have to know about behavior in order to do that. It makes sense. Yeah
So literally a lot of the times it is how I get inspired to get into work and be productive.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. So when it comes to UX design, I know you have a lot of, I guess you can say, labels that you would give yourself aside from UX designer. But when it comes to that space, what do you think is the biggest misconception that you probably have a pet peeve about, like something that you want to rant about?
What is a misconception or a pet? Honestly, everybody is a designer in one way or the other, or in their own right. But there's this constant need. People feel like they need to prove a point that they're a better designer. And honestly, it's foolish, because there's nobody that's a better designer. Your experience across life actually even determines how much of a designer you are. For example, nothing concerns me about Web3 or crypto or the multiverse or the metaverse, because it doesn't interest me. Like, I can't even design shit. If you ask me to design, even with so much experience in design, if you ask me to go and design Web3, I don't know what I'm doing there, man. Sorry. Because it doesn't interest me. I haven't spent time to study it. Like, Web3 started, was it not after the pandemic, we started hearing about the multiverse and Web3, and Web3 is coming. But there are people who are already claiming they are Web3 design experts, and I'm like...
Yeah, do you know what? That's such a great point. It's like, when the technology just emerges and they're already experts, it's like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Like,
I think people are trying to establish themselves as just like early starters or like established in territory. Yeah, like
they're part of the founding party, but you're still not an expert yet, because technically this is an adopted mainstream. Like, how can you be an expert in something that's like just emerging?
Literally ask somebody to explain blockchain to you like you are 5. And I promise you, they'll explain it to you and you'll be like, okay.
Here's a plug. Go listen to our episode on Let's Talk Blockchain.
We have an episode of that.
A friend of mine, Adora, shared the strength of how a lot of people have sold their career more on speaking to the industry and the skill than actually doing the work. Like, you can't point any notable work to any of these people, but somehow they have amassed an impressive, I would say impressive, honestly, amount of following by just, and it begs to ask a question, and I don't know. I tell people one of the reasons I do design is also because, honestly, if not because I need money for my everyday life or day to day, I literally would enjoy sitting on my computer exploring design. I mean, before I was ever being paid, I enjoyed doing design. And it is a reason why I'm always finding something to solve. I'm experiencing products. I'm seeing how things are being built. If you look at my tabs, if I share my channel, you see my tabs. It's literally articles, stacked 30 tabs, and all of them are articles. And that's me reading about how the world is being designed. It fundamentally ties down to one key question. How was this made? How and why was this made? Every single thing. This same question literally ties back to even questioning my own beliefs or my faith. You get, why am I here and who am I? A lot of the times when I get in, or when I go online, I see the design banter fight and I'm laughing so hard. I won't blame them, honestly. And I also think like it's a phase. I'm hoping it's a phase, because even me too, when I was learning and all of that, I was always sharing articles, reading stuff, and virtual signaling and all of that. So I can't be hypocrite and start telling them not to do it. Maybe they are doing it better than me now.
So what would you say is the solution to that? What's the best way to get people to actually focus on the work and not on the
noise? Let's not lie to ourselves. You can't get people to focus. You get those that want to focus, those that find value in the things they do, would get out of it. Those that want to posture and virtual signal, we do. You don't want to get into, you don't want to get too carried away about what other people do, because the number one thing you're going to do is they're going to say, you're gatekeeping. The only thing I always tell people, go out there and do what's important, what's purposeful, something that means something to you. Someone was talking about a tool that he uses to get black faces. So when he's designing, he needs to feed up his mock-up with faces of black people. Mm. It's a tool he uses to freeze the black. I was just raving about how these are the sort of tools that when he sees, he knows that the people who build them are actively thinking about the community and all of that. I was standing right there, and I was smiling from here to the back of my head, because that was literally my product.
Yes.
He didn't know me. And when he was like, this is a very surreal moment, because that product he just talked about was used by me and my friend. And I was like, for real? I was like, yes, you, that was, it's really cool. It's a simple product.
Mm.
There's no razzmatazz around it. It's a simple product.
Yeah.
It's something over 6,000 people use it.
I think that highlights something quite important, like why we always say it's so important to have diversity in tech and stuff like that, because if you only had like a monolith, only one group of people, you wouldn't have something like that where you now have, okay, black people can have black faces. It's something a white designer wouldn't think about that, because they don't have to. So it's like, you need diversity because you need to cater to all aspects of society, right?
Yeah. So I think that's cool. In tech.
Exactly, because you said you're more of a founder. Do you still work as a UX designer?
Yeah, so I recently moved to the UK, yeah, the Global Talent Visa, and just to settle in, start life, and all of that, I've been doing a couple of contract gigs as a UX designer for teams. Just go in, do the works. Most of them want to be designs or just research and all of that. But predominantly, my startup is one thing that keeps me up every other day.
What's the name of your startup?
Spire.
Okay. What are you guys building?
SPIRE. So we started off to build a customer feedback tool, which we have live, and it's been used by about 100 and something users. But we are in the process of pivoting into a more broader platform. And what we had was just a simple tool, and just learning from building that.
what learning path would you recommend to become a UX designer? From what you described, it's not like you didn't have like a traditional route, if you will. This was very much self-taught. If you were approached by someone who was like 18, just out of secondary school, and they said, I want to be a UX designer too, how do I get to where you are? What would be the learning path you would give them?
I think, I mean, off the top of my head, I knew a couple of design schools that I also support that do the good job for getting people started. Pexels, for example, they are very close niche, more intimate. You can always, like, you have access to tutors directly that can show you and pull you through, and you don't have to learn alone. Same reason I don't do mentorship for individuals. I only mentor faculties. So if you come to me and tell me, oh, you want me to do it, I'm like, ah, sorry. You can go to Pexels. I mentor a class, a cohort, to speak to them, because that way, the impact is larger, in my opinion. The amount of influence I have is not on just one person, but on like a larger impact. For example, mentoring a cohort, it means a better use of my time than just picking one person and being lowered down all over the person's career and all of that. I think I should build my career out myself. Mm. I think everybody should.
That is so funny.
I forgot I can't help myself. Honestly, I can't teach you how to figure
out. No, I understand what you mean. But that's so true. You said figure it out yourself. I mean, yes, I do agree with that, but I think
I never want to get to a point where I would claim I built anybody.
No, I don't think it's about building people, but just sometimes, like, you know, when you've walked a certain path, you can kind of signpost the way. Like, obviously everyone still has to choose their path and you still have to put the work in, but just like you said, you can go to design school, you can find a mentor there, you can network. Like, you've dropped a lot of gems that people can, it's not like you're building them, but you're giving them guidance a little bit. And of course, their path will still look different.
I do that every chance I get.
Yeah.
I really do that every chance I get. But I just make sure I am not super impressionable on the choices they make with their career. I most prefer when they have specific questions, I'm like, go figure things out and come back and ask me specific questions. That way I am able to give you insight on what I would do if I were in your shoes.
Yeah, I get that.
I have a follow-up question to that. So when a person has gone through that process, gone to design school or taking courses, how does the person go from learning design to actually starting work as a designer or a UX designer? Because you mentioned, let me just give a little bit of context. So you mentioned that when you got your first corporate job, you didn't have much experience and that was a bit of a struggle. So yeah, how does somebody go from just learning to actually getting a full-time job?
When I figure that most jobs were asking for 1 year experience, 2 years experience, I was getting my experience by doing freelance gigs. For example, I remember one of the most profound things I wrote was about Jumia. This was way back in 2019. App, I done the complete UX audit, their content audit and everything. It was a 10-page document, and that was the document the guy who hired me had seen. I was like, on a very superficial level, people can just take a glance at your experience, and if they don't see 1 year or 2 years of stuff, they can skip and pass. But there are also people who are keen about your skill, and if and when they see it, they are going to make commitments to have.
They will recognize it.
They will recognize it. And honestly, I don't know anyone else, because that's the one thing I counted on. I counted on the fact that, yes, even if I've not worked in a corporate organization doing UX, I have done a lot of UX work, and this is it.
I think that's a great point. Yeah. Like, it doesn't always have to be in like a corporate setting or like a full-time employed role, but like, for example, Upwork, and we know there's like a gig economy, right? So Fiverr, there's all these different platforms. you can build projects. Like you said, you had a portfolio, right? So I think outside of like formal employment, the other
way you can showcase. One of the reasons I enjoyed Udacity, for example, your capstone project in Udacity is a full-blown UX case study.
So would you say that's a resource that you'd recommend, Udacity? Like, or platform?
Yeah, the Udacity UX design course. It was until the last review of my portfolio where I updated it. The project I did for my capstone was literally in my portfolio.
So that's an example of things people can do, like
you get, yeah. So it was an extensive project where I did research, all of the research methodologies that was taught. I implemented it, the analytics, the usability testing, the metrics setting, and all those things. So just going through that process alone, doing that capstone project, which culminates all of the UX processes you would think of. And by the time I was done, I put down my portfolio as well.
Yeah, makes sense. Quick question. So you said you go from learning, you build up the skills like research, design, creativity, business. Okay, you get a job as a UX designer. What does the progression pathway look like? Am I just a UX designer forever? Is there senior, junior, director, manager? Like, how does it work? How do you progress and develop?
I mean, like every other skill, obviously, you would have to progress. Funny enough, I have never had the title junior or senior UX designer again.
What titles have you had then?
Obviously, just UX designer, product designer, it would reflect in your pay band.
You're getting to the question that was coming next.
money.
Yeah,
you get to. But point is, I have never cared about titles. You get, but I've always known at one point of my. For example, if I was going to get hired now, there's no way I would be hired as a junior designer.
Yeah.
There's also this thing here, a senior in company A is not a senior in company B.
Yeah, it's not.
For example, I can't say it would be a long shot to call myself a senior Apple designer.
Okay, so you're saying, okay, I get what you mean. So it's not necessarily linear, like it depends, okay, what platform
you get,
what company.
The size of the organization, and I guess the design maturity at that organization.
Exactly, the design maturity of the organization. If you're going into an early stage startup, you can be design lead or head of design even. But there's a stage, if the company is growing and you are not growing, one day they will have to tell you, my guy, we have to hire someone to replace.
Yeah. So now.
Yeah, I'm speaking of. Yeah.
To
the main.
The money
problem.
Talked
about money talks. A lot, actually.
You've been teasing us. You've been teasing us.
Yeah. So might as well.
So obviously, we don't want you to disclose anything you're not comfortable with, but.
Oh, trust me. Money is not my problem. I can only discuss about it.
Can you give us an idea of like from like mid 2018 that you were talking about, what kind of salary were you on then versus like now, and like as you've gotten more experience, what does that look like
My first salary was from my dad, and it was 8,000 naira.
For the month?
Yeah.
Okay.
Trust me, 8,000 naira in 2012 was a lot for a child, because I was pretty much, my first official career salary was from Softcom, and it was 145,000 naira.
Per month?
Yeah, per month.
Okay.
We're gonna have to
do conversions here.
Don't do that.
Guys, you're gonna have to go do your own research. I was gonna help you, but they said no. So please continue.
After I left Softcom, the guy who bet on me to become a UX designer at the venture studio Trium, my salary was increased by over 100%, and it was 250,000 naira. After Trium, COVID happened, had to leave, I didn't work to around August of that same year. The job I got there was 300K. It was for a software consulting firm. I was being paid 300,000 a month. After that, I had my biggest salary jump. I went from 300,000 to 3,600 dollars.
That is, see, I don't know why they don't let me convert, because that is orders of magnitude. That's orders of magnitude increase. Like, people need to understand, because he just went from hundreds of thousands to 3,000. So they might feel like, oh, what are you saying?
Which year was this?
This was in 2021.
2021, yeah, August,
that's
right?
That's almost like you're doing over a million. So that's like triple.
Like you tripled your salary.
Yeah,
that was like 2.2. I think quadrupled even. Like
mad.
Yeah.
So that was for a firm in America. So you moved.
No, the firm was in Mauritius.
Oh, the firm was in Mauritius. Mm-hmm. Okay, but it was an international organization.
Yeah, basically. It was the African Leadership Group.
Okay.
And within that same time, I was doing a part-time gig for a company in California. And cumulatively, I was doing, the amount I did $4,500 and the amount I did $5,000.
Bro, you hustle.
James, there's money in this UX game. I'm like, bro, let me go do that, you audacity.
It was literally my biggest jump. You know what they say about salary jumps? You can never go back.
Of course. Never go back. Never.
Yeah. How would you?
I think it was not long after I started feeling like, and this is literally how I knew money was not my problem. I literally just got a salary jump in January of 2021. By February, I was doing like 4K. By April, I started nursing the idea of starting my own company. I haven't even saved nada. Like, in fact, I made that money and I literally moved from Lagos to Enugu, got a 3-bedroom apartment in a very serene, quiet environment, furnished it up, bought a car. I bought a brand new SUV.
Splashing the cash.
Yeah, all of the finest things. I was literally comfortable, you get. And for some reason, I was like,
you thought to yourself, I don't like stability. who needs $4,000 a month? Forget that.
I think really I don't like stability.
Let me sprinkle a little bit of chaos in.
But I started losing the idea. It was a frustration for a lot of the things I was working on. I was like, this shit could be better. The vision for the kind of business I wanted to build was a product that helped make other products better. That was how I decided, you know what? I'm going to tell this guy I want to leave. Guess what? I was lucky. Within that time, the business was considering a layoff, and they voluntarily said, if you think you don't, like, they shared a new vision of where the company is looking to go. And I was like, if you feel like you don't fit into this new vision, you know what? No problem. Let us know. I will offer you a 3-month severance package. And I was like, I was like, let me have it. Got a severance. My severance package was around, I think it was around $12,000. I got, took my severance package. I was like, you know what? I told my, then I started looking for co-founders. I met my friend. I was like, you know what? Let's do this. Let's restart up. I learned a lot about even my industry. I started learning more about products away from the tangible things we see, like the interfaces. I started learning more about the impact of product in people's life. I started learning about business. It was also some of the incredible things that happened. Within that time, even the devil tested me, but hey. So for example, my mom got had to go to the hospital one day, and we are all told that, boom, she has a heart condition. And I'm like, I am effectively broke. This is not a time to have a heart condition. If you get. And it was crazy. It was a really, I won't even lie, as I was telling somebody the other day, I don't think I have been this depressed and pulled on different angles in a year than I have in 2022. Like 2020 was horrible, NSAS, people died, the pandemic. But for some reason, 2020 was peaceful, was more peaceful than how I have felt in this 2022. But regardless, funny enough, I still also think it was also one of my most defining years for the next phase of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I have gone on to leave that job, being my startup, going from earning up to $4,000 a month, and back to earning 250,000 a month. Because I had put together a couple of about 15 of my friends, like friends of friends, and we raised $100,000 in angel investment for our startup. And obviously, I can't be paying myself $4,000 on top of $100,000.
The money will finish.
Yeah. I mean, there's me and my co-founder. I mean, I think we used to earn about $500,000 and subsequently reduced it because we had to extend our runway, pay more people, and all of that. And at some point, we're earning nothing. I mean, in fact, at some point, we did a budget. We take out the money for the budget. After I finish paying, whatever is remaining, me and him will divide it into two. And sometimes it is nothing.
Zero divided by two.
You get, sometimes it is nothing.
Yeah.
So I did all of that and I was like, oh, more. I started to think about it. Even if I wanted to go back to 9 to 5, there are actually very few businesses in Nigeria that can afford my salary. I don't want to. I even just because I need money to survive, I never want to do a job I hate, a job I'm not happy about. And it was when I was like, you know what? Maybe it's time to actually leave this country. I promise you, my decision to leave Nigeria was last minute. It was literally last. The day, in fact, like, I just woke, the day I decided it, I woke up the next day and booked a flight ticket to London. Guess what? I haven't even applied for my visa.
I was going to say, like, where's the visa and all this?
I haven't even applied for my visa. I booked that flight because, like, I procrastinate a lot and I can just get, you know what, there's no point. But I knew the moment I booked that flight,
then
I
you have to do, yeah.
You get, and this was long before applying for my endorsement. My co-founder thought I was mad. You get, I told you now, I'll get it, don't worry. No, leave me again, I go get them. You get hired, if I don't get it, we'll push the ticket, we change it to a later time. Applied for, to get endorsed, applied for my visa, packed my bag, went home. I only spent about 4 days with my parents. I'm like, ladies and gentlemen, I'm relocating. Everybody was like, eh? I'm like, yeah, I am.
Did you have the visa at that point?
Is it?
You had the visa at that point, right?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, before you're announcing it.
Yeah. I emailed my friends who were also my investors and stakeholders. I was like, guys, we'll be fired from the UK. I'm leaving Nigeria. I'm only stay here. Because I just knew that it is going to get tougher. And I needed a cushion to be able to continue to keep going. And honestly, Nigeria barely affords you that cushion. And it's not even, sometimes it's not even about money. Your mental state is completely fucked up. There's no time to focus. There's no focus. Like, I won't even lie, barely focus back in Nigeria compared to how much focus I have here. Fun fact, I have not stepped out of my house in the last 5 days. On my own, I went to the movies 3 days ago. But aside that, I'll literally sit on my PC, work all day, play my console, come back, stretch, and continue working. You get also the ability to be able to earn passively well enough to cover my day-to-day and also keep running the company. I didn't know, I honestly did not know how I could do that back in Nigeria.
When you say earn passively, what are you doing to earn passively right now?
UX design for other companies.
Oh, so you're working on that in the UK as well?
Yeah. That's cool. That's that about money.
Money talks.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Interesting career. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very much so.
So speaking of the future, so the last question I would like to ask people is, what are you most excited about with respect to the future of UX? So one or two things.
With regards to me, I know I'm slowly transitioning from ever having to actively be in the operational side of UI UX. What I am doing with my startup, the vision I have, I very much believe in it, and passionately so. I'm already making very, very lasting moves to prepare myself for the opportunity to have to lead a company. So more or less more management, more business, more broader product strategy focused roles. That mostly is the future for me, honestly. I'm trying a lot of things. And like a friend always say, you only need to be right once. For me, I'm actually counting on all of the so many things I'm doing. I'm hoping I am right at one thing.
Yeah, that's great. That's a good way to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Charles. This has been a very interesting conversation. It's just been really cool hearing your story and your journey. I hope you, our listeners, you've picked a couple of things from this conversation. Timmy, do you want to say goodbye to the people?
Yeah, thank you all for listening.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much, Charles, for coming on. It's been a pleasure. And I hope that you all understand what UX design is a little bit more, what the role entails, the possibilities. You have some of the real numbers to think about. And yeah, let us know if you've got any questions for Charles, or pass them along.
Yeah, thank you, Charles. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thanks all. Catch you next week. Bye.
Bye.